January the 1st. Romeo and Juliet. Prologue. Very few of Shakespeare's plays have a prologue, but among them is the following from Romeo and Juliet. It is one of the most famous openings in the canon and a fitting start for our year of Shakespeare. The prologue tells us that these original star-crossed lovers are going to die, which amounts to something of a spoiler. Because of this, the audience knows that despite the levity and love in the beginning of the play, this couple is hurtling, unbeknownst to them, towards a tragic fate.
Two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lay our scene, from ancient grudge break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life, whose misadventured piteous overthrows doth with their death bury their parents' strife. The fearful passage of their death-marked love, and the continuance of their parents' rage, which but their children's end, naught could remove, is now the 2 hours' traffic of our stage. The which, if you with patient ears attend, what here shall miss, our toil shall strive to mend.
January the 2nd, Twelfth Night, Act 1, Scene 1. Shakespeare mentions food in all of his plays, and many of the associated phrases have become absorbed into modern English expressions. Perhaps in your salad days, when the world is your oyster, you may find yourself in a pickle. You may have fond memories of a feast fit for the gods, though not in the same sense as Brutus meant it in Julius Caesar. For him, the feast is Caesar, whom Brutus hopes to carve up. The opening line of Twelfth Night is one of Shakespeare's most well-known. Here, the lovelorn Duke Orsino orders his court musicians to keep playing romantic tunes so that he might become sick of thinking about love, like a glutton, unable to contemplate another mouthful.
If music be the food of love, play on. Give me excess of it that surfeiting the appetite may sicken and so die. That strain again. It had a dying fall. Oh, it came o'er my ear like the sweet sound that breathes upon a bank of violets, stealing and giving odour. Enough, no more. 'Tis not so sweet now as it was before. Oh, spirit of love, how quick and fresh art thou, that notwithstanding thy capacity receiveth as the sea, nought enters there of what validity and pitch soe'er, but falls into abatement and low price even in a minute. So full of shapes is fancy, that it alone is high fantastical.
January the 3rd. The Merchant of Venice. Act 5, Scene 1. Music is a poignant feature in many of Shakespeare's plays, just as it was important in the philosophy of his era. Pythagoras' view, which was entertained right up until the Renaissance, was that the celestial spheres on which the planets and stars move around must make a sound as they spin. He called this sound the music of the spheres, a principle of harmony which governs the whole universe. With this in mind, in The Merchant of Venice, when Jessica says that she is never merry when she hears sweet music, Lorenzo observes that she must be attentive to the harmony of the universe. By extension, anybody who claims to be entirely unmoved by music should be regarded with caution.
The reason is your spirits are attentive. For do but note a wild and wanton herd, or race of youthful and unhandled colts, fetching mad bounds, bellowing and neighing loud, which is the hot condition of their blood, if they but hear perchance a trumpet sound, or any air of music touch their ears, you shall perceive them make a mutual stand, their savage eyes turned to a modest gaze, by the sweet power of music. Therefore the poet did feign that Orpheus drew trees, stones, and floods, since naught so stockish, hard, and full of rage, but music for the time doth change his nature. The man that hath no music in himself, nor is not moved with concord of sweet sounds, is fit for treasons, stratagems, and spoils. The motions of his spirit are dull as night, and his affections dark as Erebus. Let no such man be trusted. Mark the music.